Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Earned First podcast. My name is Arun Sudham, and I'm founding editor at Earned First. And this is actually a special podcast that we're doing in partnership with Finn Partners. It's going to be an episode that reviews some of the themes, the lessons, and perhaps takeaways from Praxis Asia Pacific, which took place in Singapore on the 14th of October. Just 3 or 4 days ago, as we record this, maybe when you listen to this, a few more days will have passed. It was the international debut for Praxis. Praxis is an event that has been running for 12 very successful years in India. And it was a huge privilege for me personally to bring it to Singapore. The response was kind of overwhelming. I wasn't expecting the turnout, the support, and really the level of positive feedback as well. It was very good energy in the room. The venue helped, I think, being at the National Gallery in Singapore, certainly kind of, I think, helps elevate some of the conversations. And we covered a lot of ground at Praxis. We started out with a conversation with Dr. Bikki Bangu, who was president of Rolls-Royce for many years, has apparently just accepted a role at Temasek, by the way, the day after the event. I wasn't allowed to talk about it on stage. He talked about how communicators can prove their value at the highest levels of organizations, which is always very relevant. And then we moved into a variety of topics across geopolitics, the impact of artificial intelligence, of course, what consultancies are doing to differentiate themselves, the tussle for talent, and indeed the reinvention of corporate affairs functions. So there's a lot to discuss, and I'm very happy to be joined today by two people who I believe were there the whole day on Tuesday. So joining us from Singapore, we have James Brasher, who's the managing partner of Rice Finn Partners. Welcome, James.
Thank you.
And Joyce Leong, who is senior partner at Finn Partners Singapore. Welcome, Joyce.
Thanks, Arun. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you both on. So you were both there the whole day on Tuesday?
Yeah, yes. We were there.
Diligently.
I had a slightly longer lunch than I should have, but I did catch I did get in time.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, well, it was hard because, I mean, honestly, we were not expecting the turnout. And I think we had something like 180 people in the room at lunch. So it was busy. So it took people a while to kind of conclude the lunch break, which is fine. I think sometimes you have to let these things flow. Yeah. But no doubt you were diligently preparing for today's podcast. So let me start by asking you both, and James, I'll start with you if that's okay. What really stood out for you on Tuesday? What were the themes that really resonated and that you think are perhaps worthy of further discussion here now?
Well, something that you did share in your intro that I have to say I really felt that was really good was it was this vibe, this sort of collaborative spirit, if you like, in the room that made it very comfortable, I think, for people to share, which is exactly what you want at this sort of event. But I thought it was at a level you don't usually see, or I don't usually feel. And I think that's thanks in large part to the people who spoke and presented their openness. But it just really gave way to some really, I think, quality conversation as well. And you weren't too bad yourself, Arun.
I think the best, for a moderator or host, the best thing is to be unnoticed. That's the best compliment that can be paid, right? You just don't want to get in the way.
But I think it really lent itself to a really good, open session. And I think for me, some of the big takeaways would be around, well, even the theme of communications at the crossroads, I think that really nicely sums up the place that we as practitioners find ourselves in. And as was discussed, there's a lot going on. a lot of disruption. I think, as you mentioned also in the intro, AI was tackled from lots of different angles. But all the disruption is making our jobs harder, I think harder than ever. And, you know, I like that what was discussed helped us better prepare for what's going on now, but then it was also looking ahead. And I loved that there was so much focus on the person, on the human impact of the issues, the things that we were discussing. And that made a big difference for me, and I think for a lot of people that attended, just because that's such an important part of what we do and helping us do better, is really taking that into account. So it's not just always talking about the tools or the issues. It's what about the people in office?
Really good points. I think, you know, I'd love to say there's some sort of formula or process you can follow that gets to that atmosphere and energy and candor in the room, but there isn't. I think it's just a, you know, it's a sort of alchemy where you kind of have good speakers, they're prepared well. I think there's, for many of the people, you know, we've been doing this for many years, right? So perhaps we've built up a level of trust amongst us, whether that's with not just the people on stage, but also the people in the crowd, right? The community. So I think that, you know, it's a nice thing to see, but I think it's also a reflection of maturity, industry maturity. And if you do these events, perhaps in places where the industry is less mature, I think sometimes you do get less candor because people are a little bit more insecure, perhaps a little bit more competitive and less willing to really open up about some of these challenges, which is understandable. But as you said, James, we can only kind of tackle and address these problems by, I think, coming together. So, yeah, it's really nice to hear that. And of course, the human angle, that was really what stood out to me, I think, because if you say to someone, yeah, we had three or four sessions on AI, you know, it's not necessarily the stuff of which dreams are made.
But I mean, so often it's, yeah, I mean, it could be just AI. And, you know, it was not that at all. Every single session I noticed came back to the people.
Yeah. So it really wasn't about AI as so much as it was about what are people grappling with, right? What is top of mind for the people in this industry? And of course, AI is one of the things that is really changing a lot, you know, changing a lot of the processes and products and all of that. Joyce, what stood out for you in terms of the discussions on Tuesday?
I think sort of, you know, supplementing what James said, right? I think the people in the room did make the biggest difference, right? Everyone's sort of open to discussion and collaboration. And I think what was really nice for me was that there's a well balance of both the agency as well as the brand side of the perspective, which is something you may not always see in a event, you know, of this kind, right? And I think that lends itself to provide a little bit more of a well-rounded perspective. And it's good, like, you know, from my point of view, because I'm coming from agency, right? Hearing from the brand owners or, you know, that really was a little bit more eye-opening, you know, in that sense. So I really liked that part. And I think the main thread that really stood out for me was that, you know, the roles, whether you're in agency or in the brand side, is changing. There are all these challenges coming in. You know, what is it that you need to do in order to make yourself a little bit more ready for the future?
Yeah, interesting as well, because I think sometimes there can be a gulf between agency and in-house. I'm not sure if there, I wouldn't say there was evidence of a gulf between agency and in-house on Tuesday, but there's on certain topics and issues, there's certainly a divide, and not in the sense of a confrontational divide, but a gap in, you know, thinking and process. In some cases, in-house people are potentially ahead. You know, I think they are much more aware of, for example, the importance of proof and value, because I feel like their functions are really under a lot of pressure at the moment.
Yeah, and I think some of the panelists that sort of allude to the fact that, you know, there is a place for both to play together, and there is a role for each, you know, and how best to navigate the future together. And I think that was really important because, you know, it's really not going to be onus on one or either side. It is a collaborative effort.
Yeah, how did you see that, James? Because I mean, I've always thought when it comes to innovation, you know, agencies tend to be a step ahead, which is which you'd expect. You know, they're product focused businesses. Their product is comms, right? So you would kind of expect them to be a little bit ahead of in-house people. But you had people from, you know, companies like ByteDance, like LinkedIn, very sophisticated in terms of content. Do you still see evidence that there is kind of a gap between in-house and agency, or do you see it playing out in different ways?
I don't really. I mean, I think it depends. It depends a lot on the in-house, the organization, and then the agency as well. You know, I think what was interesting in one of the sessions was with Meta, was where Bridget was sharing about how their team evolved. And I think she was talking about they've brought in a creative, they've brought in a data analyst in the last year. They've brought in some creative people as well. And, you know, I think what that sort of was saying to me was, okay, are we on the agency side, are we up to date with someone like Meta and their team? And I feel that in many ways we are, but then how is our role going to change as time goes on if more organizations are sort of in-housing these skills or this expertise? But, you know, I think what she said was great, that, you know, there's a lot of value from that outside perspective that agencies can still provide. And, you know, I think it's our job on the agency side to morph and to adapt to the client and the clients. And for us, that can be very different from one client to another. And so, yeah, I guess making sure that you can meet their needs, but then also, you know, in one of the other conversations, or it may have been the same conversation, you know, what came out was the importance that we sort of partner with them on the thinking, so that we're not just arms and legs. But yeah, you know, I just getting back to the what was being shared before about you know, in-house perspective versus agency. I found it really, it's always so valuable getting the perspective from someone like Bicky, who's really, you know, who's looking at things, or his view is from the top, if you like. Because even if you are, say, dealing with business leaders on a daily basis, in many cases, many of us are, we having conversations with them that are about the place of comms in their world or in their organization, or comms people in the broader scheme of things. So some of the perspective he provided, I thought was really useful and helpful. I mean, and I can share a bit about what I took away from that session, you know, now.
Yes, you know, please.
You know, when he was sort of saying that people sort of look at comms as being the crisis savior, if you like. So
yeah,
everything's just going along normally. We're not really engaging closely with comms until a crisis pops up, and then all of a sudden come running to comms, you know, in that reactive setting to help us get out of this problem. But he was thinking about the need to shift that relationship to being reactive to more proactive. And talking about how role that comms has a role to play in, say, business modeling and resilience early on. So developing the strategy, not just executing it like once the strategy's baked. And something that that we often forget, and I know I certainly do, is that we have, you know, when I say we, meaning the comms, the in-house team, the agency, but we have insights that are across stakeholders that are the broadest in the organization and sometimes the deepest, depending on the group. So our view of the network, as he put it, and sort of the stakeholders, is very valuable to the business, but it isn't used often enough to, say, inform business strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. He made that point. It has to be more proactive. It has to be embedded across different functions. And he challenged comms people to move out of their, I think their kind of, he didn't say comfort zone, but I'll say comfort zone. He said, I think, you know, they need to move out of just talking to other comms people, for example. Mm-hmm. They need to be actively talking to other functions, building networks along those lines. Because, and that's interesting to me, because I guess from my perspective, you sometimes think, well, organizations will handle all of that, right? They'll make sure that comms is talking to sales. And making sure that kind of salespeople understand the insights that comms might have. But it doesn't always happen that way. The onus is on the comms function to actually step up and do it. I think that was the point perhaps he was making. And it's a really interesting one, how much he talked about sales as well, which, you know, honestly, you go to a lot of comms conferences and yes, we talk about measurement, we talk about evaluation. I don't think I've been in a session where someone talked quite as much about, you know, he was talking about how we sell products in different markets. And it's a very valuable perspective to have, I think.
Yeah, and the role of comms going in, if you're entering into a new market, in laying the groundwork before you even think about going and trying to sell.
Yeah, he made that point.
Yeah,
I think it does go back also to some of the tensions that have been in the conversations about the role of comms in the whole scheme of things, right? Where if we're just seen as sort of like execution, then there's a big part that's missing. And then that gets into a different conversation where C-suites or, you know, leaders might go, why is comms relevant? Because ultimately for them, they're looking at what the business outcomes are going to be. How does this help me drive growth in my business? And that's where, you know, as communicators, we do need to get in to those conversations. And that really also, like going back to what James had said, about bringing those insights in to help, you know, sort of influence strategy, but also being able to measure the impact of our work beyond just sort of the vanity metrics. You know, it's not just about what we've done, but how does that align with the business goals and where is it helping to drive growth?
And Bicky made those points as well. He even, I think, admitted at one point that, you know, yes, when it's tough, comms is, if not the first, one of the first functions to face scrutiny. And I think, you know, that's true. We've all seen that. And the only way out of that is to demonstrate value, right? And as you said, it's about value beyond vanity metrics. That was discussed. But it's also about, I think, understanding there's a level of insight that comms can bring across all these different areas. But is that, you know, it requires that kind of more proactive mindset. I actually thought as well, Bicky's, the opening session dovetailed really well with the penultimate session, which was with the APAC-D, where we had the three corporate affairs heads. We had, four corporate affairs heads from Kellanova, Heineken, Haleon, and Airwallex,
hmm.
Talking about the pressure on their functions and how they are reinventing. And whilst I think we had four people on there who whose functions are perhaps not quite as pressured as some other companies, so they were relatively, I don't know if I'd use the word secure, but they were at least optimistic. They, you know, there was still that acknowledgement that, you know, there is pressure, there is restructuring, and, you know, we have to always be thinking about how we're changing, how we're demonstrating value. I'm wondering, was there anything in that session perhaps that stood out for you as well? Because I just thought that was an interesting look from, you know, corporate head affairs heads at quite different types of companies.
Yeah.
I think that was one of my favorite sessions, and James knows this. That was a session that really stood out for me, yeah, because I thought it was a very powerful message that they had, right? That especially when May from Airwalks actually said, you know, the job description is the job description, it's not the job, you know, and that really signals how you need to sort of, you know, think out of the box in terms of what your role is going to be. It's not really just strictly comms, the traditional sense of the word, right? You need to look at, you know, where does it tie in with the business? What are the different, you know, connections you can have? Where do you really drive growth? And how do you make, you know, help to join the different dots along the line to create that value for the organization? Yeah.
A lot of talk about fluency in that session. James, what did you make of it?
No, because while the discussion was mostly, I guess, in the context of corporate affairs, because of, you know, that's then leadership in corporate affairs, because that's the roles that the sort of each of them have, I felt that what they shared is obviously very relevant and applicable outside of that. Just the value of, I think they were talking about data fluency, business acumen, and learning agility was something else I remember that was mentioned. I mean, that's sound advice for anyone in any role. Coincidentally, it was working with Erin. I was reporting to Erin many years ago, and her giving
At Lewis.
Yeah, her giving me exposure to numbers was, you know, one of those times where my business acumen certainly took a significant step forward. But yeah, that's just a coincidence. But that was, you know, something that was, I thought they covered really well.
Yeah, and they talked about the importance of relationships with the board, which I think was a really well-made point. And also I thought Rimi Harindran, who's the corporate affairs head at Kellanova, she'd said, you know, it's also about this kind of personal evolution of being comfortable letting go a little bit. Which is also required these days. So, which I found quite an interesting observation, because it isn't always, you know, it isn't always just about, you know, getting better at all these different things, but sometimes it's about how you handle and control, manage different situations.
Yeah, I think it was in that panel session. It was one of them where just on that, in relation to the board, that someone said, you know, you've got to look at not just what your boss needs, it's what your boss's boss needs. And I thought that was good as well.
Yeah. It's
a little bit like the circle of influence that you need to understand, even sort of within the organization and how that all connects together. And therefore, what can you do to sort of facilitate those relationships? Yeah,
sorry, I've actually pulled up the story now, so now I can give you exact quotes. This is one from Erin. We are schizophrenic, part strategist, part influencer, part storyteller. You have to be fluent in policy, in ESG, data fluent. Mei Loon from Airwallex, practitioners should embrace agility. I would encourage everybody to flex with change. And here's an interesting one I'll put to you both. The importance of generational renewal, because this is something that extends beyond the corporate affairs function. I think it was Rimi who said, I would invite communicators to think about how you are building the next gen as leaders? How are you exposing them to all of this? Are we doing enough to bring the next gen to the table? So how would you both respond to that question?
What I think about is, and just in relation to something that was discussed at the conference around that, was it was in the, actually in the second session with Barbie, where, I mean, it was a great conversation, I felt, to help us sort of prepare for what's coming. You know, looking at 2030 and asking ourselves, are you ready?
Yeah.
I mean, after, I think it was Thomas shared the backdrop of the world of 2030, I mean, my response to that question of are you ready was hell no. But I felt, but I was relieved to see in the study that they did I wasn't the only one. It looks like the majority of people don't quite feel like we're ready for what's to come in the next 5 years. But something that Barbie was talking about, because we were, you know, obviously there was a lot of discussion around AI, but she talked about the importance of sort of foundational skills, you know, and just thinking about the next generation. Sure, there's all these skills and expertise that we and they, I say we because I'm older than them, but that we need to work on and continue to develop around AI and adapting to that change. But the importance of things like relationships, you know,
I think soft skills.
Yeah, face-to-face meetings. And I'd go further to say basic communication skills, writing. You know, these things are so important in our industry, in any industry, but particularly in ours. And she was quite quick to say that, it's not one or the other. We need to be doing both. And I think for the next generation that, yes, there's simply because of the way the world is, I think that there does need to be a lot of emphasis put on softer skills as well. And that's, I think, older people like myself can help with that, because I guess my experience is of a world that was before, you know, the internet. And so, you know, helping the younger generation develop those equally important softer skills, I think is part of the job that we have to do.
That was
encouraging.
Yeah, sorry, I was going to say that as well, the soft skills are important, the technical skills are important. I think those provide the foundation. But I also think that, in terms of, Arun, what you asked about, are we preparing the next generation of leaders, right? I think mentorship is an important thing that needs to be effective as well. You know, we do a fair bit of that ourselves at Finn, where we have a mentorship program in place to sort of help, guide the next level of leaders, right? And I know some of the speakers at the conference had also talked about this mentorship being pretty important, because it does convey certain experiences, provide additional perspectives that may not necessarily translate as well in training on technical or soft skills per se, but does work well in sort of a mentorship environment. And I remember when the speakers even mentioned about this reverse mentorship, where you learn from the next generation as well as, sort of guide the next generation. So it's a two-way street.
It's all coming back to me now as you discuss these things. I've kind of suppressed all these memories from being on stage, and now I can remember the point, about reverse mentoring. In fact, that whole session, the 2030, are you ready? The stats were very interesting. So whilst people think they're personally ready, I think a majority, only a minority think their organizations are ready. And then when they're asked what they're ready for, you see more confidence in terms of technologies and things like AI, but less in terms of areas described, I guess, as foundational skills, right? Strategic understanding and foresight. Does that worry either of you at all?
Yeah. It is. Yes, for sure. Because I think it's easier to talk about technology. It's easier to figure that out, but the soft skills, the communication skills, that doesn't always translate as well. And I know that for a lot of the younger people joining the workforce now, where they're sort of like digital natives, digital first, they're a lot more comfortable messaging than they are in actually having a conversation in person on the phone. There's this bit of an aversion to pick up the phone to speak to somebody. And that could mean then that very important skill gets lost along the way because it's just not enough practice of it.
I mean, it's amazing how often I find myself saying, back in my day. But I think it's certainly the case. One of the other questions that was sort of rolling around my head just when we were discussing on the day and just discussing this now is also whether AI is making us stupider as a species. And I'd have to say yes, purely based on what we outsource to it, a lot of thinking, creativity and other things as well. It's sure, it's making things faster, yes, but are we getting dumber as a result of that? Perhaps. But I'm not sure. Maybe that's not a discussion for today, but it's certainly something that I wonder about.
It's actually, so we looked, I looked at it in a newsletter earlier in the year because someone actually had made the same point at another event that I had been to about the cognitive atrophy. And there's been, there's been a couple of studies about this, but the results I think are kind of inconclusive. So on the one hand, yes, there's some evidence to suggest that if you're outsourcing tasks to AI, you become less good at doing them, and that's a challenge. But it does depend on to an extent on how much you're outsourcing, and how intentional you are about the kind of things that you're doing. So it's quite a nuanced topic, but it worries me a lot because I think if you're a writer or if you're writing, it's so tempting to outsource writing. And I really worry that, if you lose the ability to write, then you're kind of, well, at least for me anyway, I would be stuck, I think. So yeah, I think that's quite a big concern, I would say, in terms of AI.
I think it also goes back to a whole discussion where people talk about, yes, AI is great, but there always needs to be a human intelligence at the center of it, right? So I think that then lends itself to the, in response to James's question, I would say it depends how intentionally are you structuring the use of AI, what kind of guidelines and policies you have in place that then governs it in a way that you don't lose the important skill sets, but still sort of like the human at the center of it. And I think that's a question that actually a lot of the organization had asked as well, or had discussed during the conference. And we ourselves, find ourselves confronting this question, right? Which is why, even at Finn, we've got our own sort of guidelines and policies with the use of AI. We know it's already here. We know there's no running away from it. So it's not about don't use it. It's more like how can we best use it without losing what's important to us and still having human intelligence be the one that value adds, that gives it, that perspective, that, emotive intelligence, the authenticity. So you take something and make it better rather than sort of taking the lazy way out and just have it be the same, but have someone else AI do it for you.
It reminds me of something that Heidi Ashley said from HSBC. I don't think she actually used this quote, but she made a longer point, which was that throughout her career, she has kind of, as you'd expect from someone who works in corporate comms on the in well, she's in financial services now, it's heavily regulated industries. There's a lot of crisis, there's a lot of issues management. and she effectively runs to the fire, right? That's kind of the skill she's had to develop and hone. And yes, of course, that's important from a crisis perspective, but I think it's important in general, perhaps. It means, you know, rather than taking the easy way out, actually having to confront whatever the challenge might be, whether it's making sure that AI isn't, you know, you're not outsourcing everything to AI, or making sure that you are dealing with a crisis, making sure that you're, you know, weighing up how different governments are responding to different things and making a determination on that rather than trying to please everyone. This is a, it's not always instinctive, but I think it's something that perhaps it's a skill that for communicators becomes more important.
Something else just around AI that it cut across a number of other panel discussions and that really and was discussed that it's something that I constantly think about, and I'm not exaggerating there, but it's we all know that the way we're using it, it's helping us to, you know, generate content, efficiency, that sort of thing. But one of the examples that it was Emma shared was how there's AI-driven avatars selling over a live stream in China. And they're based on two real people. And they sold over $7 million of products during this live stream, which is more than any, it's the most they've made ever, like more than they've done when they've done it themselves in real life. And what was talked about, and I still grapple with though, is that with all that we can do with AI and that we're doing with a generative AI, what happens to authenticity, credibility, trust? You know, these things that we keep telling ourselves are so important, you know, and studies show people feel are important and are so important to our profession and people working in it. But, you know, and I wonder to myself if it is more of a generational thing that, because I care about authenticity and, you know, does it mean that as time goes by that that's going to matter less? Or become less important? Or are we heading to a point where there is going to be a backlash against content that's created by AI, where people essentially say refuse to consume content that they know is AI generated? I mean, I actually don't know the answer, so that's why I'm asking the question.
So that was the presentation from Emma Smith from Sandpiper, but there was another session with Isabel from the Hoffman Agency. And they were discussing this exactly, I think, really, you know, in a world of AI content, what is the value of credibility? And I think it was Puneet Singh from ByteDance, which is, of course, the company behind TikTok, who had said, you know, credibility ultimately becomes the most important currency for communicators. It buys belief, it buys you trust, it gets your net promoter scores up, it gets, you know, that's what will persuade people to stand up for you and defend you, third parties, independent voices. And I think Alisa Chopard from LinkedIn made the point that, you know, empathy and authenticity become even more important in this AI-driven world. So I think that's true. I think they do become more important. But the question is, how many people will actually listen to that? How many brands and corporates? Because the temptation is always, I think, more content at scale, faster, you know.
But also, does that China example suggest otherwise?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Did people maybe trust an AI avatar because of the source of that avatar? Is it about the ecosystem?
Joyce? It's also got to do with, I was going to say, it's also got to do with, was this already apparent to the audience? Because I think one of the key things as well is disclosure, right? Are they aware that it was an avatar they were sort of interacting with, and therefore, you know, that's acceptable in that sense?
Yeah, really good. It's really good questions. I think there's always, you know, the ecosystem matters as well, to an extent. So people, I would imagine, are maybe more attuned to this kind of buying on certain ecosystems, in certain communities, maybe even in certain countries. Will that work everywhere? Will credibility be more important in other places? I guess we'll see. But it does raise really interesting questions, because yes, AI avatars are coming. I think we're seeing not just for selling, but even, you know, CEO avatars, people were talking about.
There's the whole AI influencer movement, right? Yeah. With a lot of, you know, these AI influencers getting really popular very quickly, huge followings. People are aware they are AI, and they do follow them with fully aware what they're going in for.
And what do you think is the formula for an authentic AI influencer, assuming there is some kind of authenticity there?
I think at the back end of it, right, you know, even if the avatar is AI generated and you know, content or what they do is driven by AI, there is still some human sort of orchestration behind that.
Exactly. That's trusted.
So that's not missing. It's not fully automated in a sense, right?
Yeah.
So there are still certain directions that's given, certain decisions are made by the human, which then lends itself to being able to make sure that that engagement is as authentic as it can be. So there's that to consider as well. And I think it is a different area of influence that we do need to consider because of the changes we're seeing in today's landscape. And there are going to be areas we need to navigate there, like you said, according to, you know, the levels of trust, authenticity. How do we make sure that that isn't lost even when we create those sort of engagement?
That credibility is there, but I suppose the risk is the more we see of AI avatars, there's always that risk that they'll become kind of more and more divorced from humans and humanity. And that's where challenges will come up, right? And let's be honest, right? Not all of them are going to have that same level of human involvement. There will be pretty nefarious uses as well, no doubt.
I think there's been some backlash on that as well, where when they didn't want it enough, and then an AI influencer was sort of saying things that were, you know, a little bit not quite approved. And so that had a huge audience backlash, as well as from brands as well, where, you know, that's not quite right. It was going to very...
It went rogue.
Yes, exactly.
Did they lose their job?
Sorry?
Did they lose their job?
Pretty much. I'm sure
unplugged.
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we can close soon. I just wanted to end... this has been a really fascinating discussion, but I actually wanted to end, perhaps appropriately, with the final conference session about the kind of the future of consultancies, in a way, because we didn't talk about that much during the day, but we did a little bit at the end with George Kaprayash from Yafira, and we had Lina from Mutant, and they were just talking about how, you know, consultancies scale and grow in this kind of environment. I'm wondering if there were any takeaways from that session that made you perhaps rethink how you're looking to grow at Finn.
From memory, you know, I think what they talked about was, and was shared really, I think, drove home the role that obviously people play in the success, growth, development of businesses like ours. And it wasn't just in that session. I think, you know, I think, but they did talk about, and I think, you know, what they've done in terms of, say, giving people a stake in the business and that sort of thing, that has really, I think, served them well, their culture, L&D as well. And I think that's certainly something that, and quite recently, actually, Joyce and I have been discussing, is the emphasis that we put in those areas. And I think that traditionally, or historically, I should say, both Rice and Finn Partners in Singapore have done a really good job with that. But, you know, it's an area that, given all that we've talked about and that was the focus of some of the discussions and conversations at the summit, you know, even more effort, more resource, more time that needs to go into developing people, into training, and maybe looking at not the normal and traditional ways of doing that, in order to kind of stand out and be different. And I mean, not just for the sake of it, but so that our people, you know, can continue to sort of do great things, do good work, and, you know, keep doing what's needed to for us to keep growing. I think that was something that, and again, not just in that session, but from some of the comments that others made as well, that was one of the takeaways for me.
I mean, I know that James, we had talked a lot about that as well, and how we want to make sure that the culture is always sort of, you know, preserved, and making sure that, you know, of course, you know, the employees are invested in the future with us as well. And I think the whole learning development and making sure that they're also sort of embedded very much in that journey is kind of important, so that it is a joint future that we're creating together, and not sort of a solo interpretation of where they should be.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes back, I guess, quite neatly to the importance of that kind of collaborative energy, right? Whether that's at the agency or in the conference room. So long may that continue. I think we are definitely stronger together. So James and Joyce, thank you so much for your time. And thanks, of course, for your support. And thanks to Finn Partners for partnering with us on this podcast. Thanks for being at the event and paying attention throughout. That's really all I ask of people that come. So I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.